Before we start today's podcast, I want to encourage you to go to dogbehaviorconference.com and check out this year's Dog Behavior Conference. It's a three-day live online event available to anyone around the world who loves dogs and wants to live their best life together with them. Registration is open now and seats are going fast, so visit dogbehaviorconference.com and reserve your spot today. That's dogbehaviorconference.com. Now, let's get to the podcast. Here we are with the team again for this fabulous discussion, which I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. Strange and weird dog behavior. And so I'm going to wait for people to join us. Hi, everybody on Zoom. The team is with me, the VSA and Positively team is with me today. We have Ali, Jamie, Wendy, Laura, Tiffany, Tara, and Maya. And yes, we're going to be talking about strange, weird, and wonderful canine behavior. I'm going to start off, for those of you who have watched, do you know what? Was it 2021? I started filming It's Me or the Dog Again in the summer of 21. Or is it 22? I think it was 22. Do you know what? I can't, because with the whole pandemic, everything was just, you know, up in the air. But maybe it was 22. Anyway, filmed, and one of my first stories was a dog called George. He was a Cocker Spaniel. He was about 9 years old. And he lived in a lovely house with his lovely people. He was absolutely divine. And he definitely had separation issues. He followed especially his mom around all the time. Whenever she got up to go anywhere, George was there too. But interestingly enough, even though he didn't like them going out, he could cope with it. I put that in inverted commas, cope with it. He would just sort of, he would lay his head on the windowsill of the window that was just off the stairs, and a kind of a good place for him to lie down and watch for when his mom and dad would come back. However, one evening they went out to go celebrate. In the UK, we have Bonfire Night on November the 5th. They went to go and celebrate Bonfire Night on November the 5th. And of course, we have lots of fireworks. They came back to absolute destruction in the kitchen. Destruction. All of the lower cupboards had been emptied out of everything. All the plates, all of the stuff underneath the sink, all of the cups, everything. And there was George waiting for them in the kitchen when they came back. And so they were stumped. I mean, they got it right. They thought, well, the fireworks probably are just too much for this dog. And this is probably why it happened. You know, we know that he has separation issues anyway, but with the fireworks, how dumb we were to go out and not think about our dog. And they felt so bad about what had happened, because they knew that he had a little bit of sound sensitivity, but they didn't realize to what extent. And that was about, I think this happened when he was around 5 years old. Since then, whenever they go out, George will look wistfully out the window, but he has to go and clear the cupboards down in the kitchen out. Now, this is a problem because there's stuff, especially under the sink, that you don't want him to get. So now not only was he clearing the cupboards out, he was actually picking up things that he shouldn't, including chemicals, and they were very worried about it. So it's one of the reasons why I went to go see them, because they couldn't understand this strange behavior. Why was he clearing the cupboards out? Now, he didn't only do it downstairs in the kitchen. He also did it in the guest room cupboard, where he started clearing out the cupboard, the base of the cupboard, with all of their shoes and clothes that had fallen down there. He cleared that out as well. And they knew that, look, this was George's thing, whether there was fireworks outside or not, or noise outside or not. Whenever they went out, George would clean the cupboards out. So that is my story of weird and wonderful behavior. And I will tell you why I think it was and what I did for it. But before I did, I would like anybody else to share some weird and wonderful behavior that you have witnessed, worked with, or seen in your own dog, and maybe kind of like why you thought it occurred and what you did to help that. And what do we mean by strange, weird, and wonderful behavior? So who wants to go first? I think Ali.
Yeah, I was going to talk about licking, Vic. So we have a lot of licking in our household, and I've seen a lot of licking in my days as a trainer. So I know people are talk about licking, but it's like, what are we licking? So I've seen licking the air, especially at night after meals. I've seen licking ourselves. So we're licking, the dog is licking their side or licking their paws incessantly. And I'm talking about like excessive licking, not just, oh, I, you know, chewed a chew and got it on my paws. So I lick my paws for a few minutes and then I stop. I'm talking about nonstop licking of paws, potentially even until they're raw, which is really tough. There's also licking other things like pillows, blankets, furniture, all types of licking. And we see sofa licking. Yes, I've seen that as well. Or licking people. So I've seen a lot of licking. So I don't know if you want me to dive into maybe why that is or what's going on here, but that is some weird behavior that I have seen before. Especially the air licking looks rather odd if you're not familiar with seeing it.
Yeah, I would love you to go into why you think the dogs that you were working with or did this.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is something that people put on social media. So you see dogs like licking glass and it looks really funny, especially when you're on the other side of the glass and you see the dog is doing that face, you know, where they're like pressed up against the glass and it looks really funny. And we think that this is funny, but unfortunately it's not funny. And like many things, I don't know if you've ever seen the show, Adam Ruins Everything. My husband calls me Allie Ruins Everything when I say that this cute dog video is not cute. It's actually something really not so cute. But yeah, this is another one where we may see things like anxiety, may see this as a way of coping with big feelings. It could also be medical issues. There could be indigestion, acid reflux, allergies, all sorts of things. But essentially licking is that they're uncomfortable with something, whether it's emotional or physical, that something is awry. So it could be arthritis in your paws. It could be an allergy to a food. So again, there's a lot of different reasons why dogs could be licking. I'd love to open it up to the floor if anybody else knows of reasons why dogs lick, but we went to our veterinarian and got some help with allergies. And then now we're going to vet behaviorist to talk about some other reasons how we can help with this licking and potentially even get some medications or change of diet, all sorts of things.
I've definitely seen licking in my Chihuahua, and she has had in the past acid reflux. And so she really begins to lick as well a lot when she has acid reflux. But I also, when she goes outside, when she first gets outside, she also licks. And that can be, I'm not saying 100% it is, a way that she is gathering scent. And we know that with the Flamen response, and by that I mean that every dog has what is called a Jacobson's organ, and it's or the vomeronasal plate, which is located behind the incisors on the roof of the mouth. And that is a place where it's particularly sensitive to detecting pheromones in urine or in from glands. And that's why dogs sniff each other, especially their rear ends a lot, and each other's faces, and also poop. So they're getting that. And sometimes they like to take that in through the mouth. So that could also be a reason why some dogs lick. But yeah, very interesting. Does anybody else have any kind of maybe answers as to why some dogs lick things? Tiffany?
Well, I certainly agree with Allie. Having worked in a vet clinic before becoming a trainer, I've seen, you know, from different sides, and certainly we've noticed that some licking is specific to allergies, environmental allergies, food allergies, potentially, as you mentioned, acid reflux, dogs with ulcers. I actually had a dog with ulcers myself. It can be more of behavioral and, you know, a coping mechanism potentially of something they're not comfortable with in the environment, something they're unsure of. So there's lots of different reasons. And I think it is important to kind of try to sleuth that out to the best of our ability and start to rule things out to help that dog become more comfortable, because it can either be a very serious, uncomfortable medical issue, or potentially a somewhat serious or more serious, even, you know, comfort issue when it comes to fear or anxiety. Either way, we know we don't want our dogs to feel that way, whether it's physically uncomfortable or I guess we say psychologically uncomfortable. We want to help them. And there are ways to figure it out, definitely.
Yeah. And of course, carrying on with the medical issue, Jamie, you also have an idea of potentially what it might be.
You've seen a few dogs where they lick the air frequently end up having dental issues, where maybe they're having some discomfort in their teeth, or just they're trying to soothe that. And I also know that my girl used to lick like the bed and the couch. You were mentioning that, Allie. And I think that was very much anxiety behavior when we first got her, because she didn't know how to cope with being in a home after being a stray and then being in a shelter for so long. So those are also things to think about.
Yeah. And then Vic, of course, we can talk about other types of licking.
Oh, go for it, Allie. Discussion about this to begin with, but I think it's important that you mention it. Like, we shouldn't shy away from it.
Yeah. I'll be bold. I'll discuss it. So you may or may not have seen your dog lick other parts of their body. Perhaps they're licking more private parts of their body and their genitalia, anus, all different parts of their body, and they may be cleaning themselves. It also may just smell really interesting. They lick other dogs' genitalia and parts of their body. They get a lot of really neat information. Neat. Great. But they do get a lot of information from that area. They can tell so many different things about what dogs have eaten, where they've been, who they've been around, just by getting those samples of dogs' body fluids. But your dog also may be licking their own genitalia for a long period of time, or perhaps they're moving something across it. Perhaps they're humping a favorite bed or a blanket. Or perhaps they're moving themselves across it. And I think we know what that may be. That may be their special time. So just like people, dogs do have sexual needs as well. And these are some behaviors that we've seen. So I've been called as a trainer to a house where a dog is obsessively doing this multiple times a day, and they want to know what it is that they, or they think it's funny, that the guardians think it's funny. They think that, oh, their dog really loves this bed, or, their dog, I've seen a lot of French bulldogs will use their paws because they can't use their mouths. And so they'll just be sitting on the couch. And sometimes I have to break the news to them of what really is going on here. And some guardians feel shame, or they feel embarrassed that this is happening. But just like with people, it's up to you if you want to let your dog continue this behavior, or if you maybe want to have them do this in private. But it's up to you and what you think is appropriate for your dog. But it is a natural dog behavior. And it is something that we do want to look at, just like with any behavior, is it excessive or not? So that's maybe when you would want to talk to your veterinarian, if it is excessive, if we're doing this more than, a couple times a day, that's something that you'd want to discuss.
I was called into again in one of my last series of It's Me or the Dog was a French bulldog that was doing that a lot, was touching his little Willy Wonka, we said. And it was embarrassing, right? There were kids in the house and he would do it a lot. And he especially, so I was like, okay, are there certain times in the day that he doesn't? It was with his front paw and he would just sort of flip it, right? And I was like, are there certain times in the day that he does this? Thinking, I bet you it might be after he's had some kind of like vigorous play, or he's been out all day. And I was like, please, 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 please let that be. And she said, yeah, it actually happens, after we've been playing in the back garden, or we've come back from a walk, and then he starts to do it. And I thought, okay, well, number one there, I think it's something that's self-soothing him. But then I was like, you know what? Because he's a French bulldog, And because sometimes dogs groom themselves, my Chihuahua grooms herself, and because they clean themselves as well, and most dogs will clean their back ends and their genitalia, or at least lick there, that he actually, because of the way a French bulldog is stacked, as it were, and I don't mean that in that, oh dear, I don't mean like that. I'm saying because they're more, oh my God, weighted in the front end and not the back, they actually cannot reach, they cannot lick their penises. They cannot do it. It is virtually impossible. And so this was his way of grooming. It wasn't masturbation. It wasn't for sexual relief. It was his way of grooming. And that's how he did it. And it's interesting, Ali, you said that about French bulldogs, because that immediately made me think about this dog. And so I think once they understood really why he's doing it, that actually this is a grooming behavior, it's a self-soothing behavior, and that's why it happens when he's kind of calming down, they were happier to know that so they'd explain it, especially when guests came in. But then I also was like, okay, well, I understand that your grooming is difficult for you. Then we can maybe, I don't want to completely replace it because I don't think that's fair. It's something that he wanted to do and he needed to do, but we gave him other stuff to do. So if you want to like touch things or lick things, then here I've got this particular like Kong toy or something, fill it with a little bit of food that you can have when you're coming down. So we can do it like that rather than, you know, touching yourself, which is literally no problem for the dog, but obviously embarrassing for the people, especially when there are guests coming around. Yeah, I think I'm going to stop that now because I'm saying too many innuendos. But yeah, Maya, we can go on to maybe another subject now.
That's a good one to follow, Victoria.
Yeah, I know.
I was thinking, just to chime in with all of the other reasons that we also know that behavior can start for one reason and it can continue for an entirely different reason. And so one of the things that I've seen with licking, especially licking of people, because many people don't enjoy it, is that the licking may start for one reason. There may be a medical reason or the dog is uncomfortable emotionally, physically. People hate it. And then they start to respond to it. Let's say they start to stroke the dog or move or touch the dog. Some dogs then learn that they can ask for petting by licking. And even though the person hates it and the dog is not licking because of anxiety in that situation anymore, we now have this perfect reinforcement circle with the behavior that started in one place, which has now been recruited for another. And I see that all the time. I also was thinking of one of the strangest behaviors that I've seen was a dog that was occasionally, it seemed like randomly, would put her head in the air, snap, 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 and back up. And we couldn't figure out why she was doing it. Well, it turns out that her person was working on Zoom. The dog would do it behind the camera. It was impossible to ignore. And so surely it did not start that way. The dog didn't have a little thought, go, I know what they can't ignore. Maybe she was snapping at a fly the first time it happened. Maybe there was some other reason for her to do it. But man, once she figured out that was a fail-safe way to get her needs met, she was using it all over the place when nothing else would work. So when we think about these behaviors as bizarre, I think we should also look for reinforcement in terms of relief, physical relief, reinforcement in terms of physical pleasure, but also one of the cool and terrifying things about behavior is it can be recruited into lots of other places too. And we can end up with lots and lots of contingencies for the same thing.
You're so right. And I think that brings me on to, I mean, why don't we just sort of stay on the same kind of subject, humping, that people misunderstand why dogs hump a lot. And in fact, humping can be, again, you see loads of videos on YouTube and people laughing at it, but sometimes it can be quite desperate because this is a dog that's desperately trying to cope with the situation and can't, and that's why it's humping. Or the dog is so way overexcited, the energy's got to go somewhere. Or the dog feels very uncomfortable, so needs to control movement. I mean, there's so many reasons why dogs hump. And what should you do? Should you stop the dog from humping? Should you let the dog hump? Tiffany,
Yeah, I seem to be the expert on this for some reason. I guess I'll take that. Only because I have an ex I have my own dog, experience with my own dog who happens to be, I'm fairly petite, 5'4", and my dog is 75 pounds. And he, from a very young age, that was his go-to behavior when he was, as you mentioned, Victoria, unsure of the situation. There were new people coming over. There were new dogs around. And his go-to was not to go towards them and do the humping or mounting, but actually come to me and my leg, which obviously was very interesting in front of people. And as a very young, early trainer, of course, I had the same type of embarrassment and, oh, what do I do feelings that I think a lot of people have, a lot of dog guardians may have in that situation. And thankfully, you know, through working with my mentors and becoming more educated as a trainer and behavior consultant, I quickly learned, as you mentioned, what was the need, what was the purpose of this behavior? Because even though it might seem weird, embarrassing, strange, awkward to us, there's a reason for the behavior, for all of these behaviors. And I think that's really, really key, that we stop and think about the why for the dog in front of us. And for my dog in particular, I interpreted it and learned that it was, I'm not exactly sure what's going on, and I'm not sure if this is safe or okay. And so I personally, I taught my dog knows many cues and he listens very well. So technically I could ask him to off if it was becoming excessive, but in my experience, it was a matter of 3 to 5 seconds, maybe. And I personally chose to meet his need by keeping my leg still for 3 to 5 seconds. He got it out of his system. He felt better and relief. It didn't hurt me. And everybody was fine. And he went to greet people and went to play with the dogs. And it you know, it worked. It has worked for us. Again, if it became excessive, I would simply say off, please. And he would be able to get off. But I just found, you know, I have found it so helpful to share with clients over the years, that it's not something you have to be embarrassed about. It's certainly not something that I would be punishing my dog for doing or yelling at them or scolding them. There is a need that is trying to be met, and I want to understand it, and I want to try my best to meet that need in whatever way is safe. Obviously, if there's an elderly, frail person or a toddler or a young child, I'm going to treat that a little differently. But for the two of us, that's what worked.
So that was his kind of coping mechanism, his need to come back to his emotional anchor and go, hey, mom, hey, mom, hey, mom. And you're like, yeah, gotcha. You're cool. And then he felt confident enough to go off. And then you hope that after a while, he doesn't feel that need. He can come to you and just go, hey, hi, mom. Or then he never doesn't come to you and goes, I'm cool now, because you fed that need and you understood what he was. I had, again, another one, and all of these can be, I don't think it's aired yet. It's Mule the Dog. It's coming out in July, by the way, if you're in the UK. It'll be on social media at some point. But for those of you in the UK, you could see it on the Really channel. And this one particular dog was a huge humper, hump, 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 humper, 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 all day, as in all day. But it started when she took him for the morning walk, took him to a park, threw the frisbee again and again and again and again. And that's when he would start. And I looked at this behavior. I met her in the park and I saw her throwing the frisbee, and I saw this dog going, God, if she throws the bloody frisbee again, I can't cope with it anymore. Do we have to do this every single day? And there's loads of dogs around and I don't really feel comfortable with them. I'm not going to go up and gnash my teeth at them, but I'd rather like not be here. Hump, 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 hump. And when I told her, I was like, do you know what? This morning walk, man, this is too much for him. He's telling you he doesn't want to play frisbee and he's telling you he doesn't really want to be here. She was like, what? I said, look, maybe for a week, I want you just not to bring him here to the park. And I want to see, does this then translate in the home? You're giving him other enrichment activities. Definitely. You can go other places where it's not so overwhelming for him. Don't play the frisbee with him. Do some stuff in the back garden, maybe take him for a walk around the neighborhood, somewhere he's a bit more comfortable. And let's see if that lessens also the humping indoors. Because I really think this is a communicative gesture. I really think he's just saying to you, please enough, or mom, 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 we need you. Well, absolutely. That's exactly what happened. She didn't take him to the park for a week, and his humping in the house, I wouldn't say it was completely gone, but it's definitely, it was 80% gone, because she had understood him and she was shocked by it, that it wasn't sexual, that it wasn't, oh my God, the dominance, wasn't dominance. It wasn't her dog really trying to control her and take over as alpha and pack leader. It truly was the dog saying, please, can this just be enough? It's my favorite weekend of the year. Okay, maybe after Thanksgiving and my daughter's birthday. But it really is something I look forward to all year long, the Dog Behavior Conference. It seems like I say this every year, but it really is true. The 2024 lineup of Dog Behavior Conference speakers has me as fired up as I've ever been for what I truly believe is the most meaningful, enlightening, impactful, and inspirational event available to dog geeks like you and me anywhere in the dog world. With speakers including returning favorites like Sarah Fisher, Mike Shikashio, Arit Bloom, Andrew Hale, and Sarah Heath, to newcomers like Robert Hewings, Marty and Mikhail Becker, Lisa and Brad Wagner, and more. The range of topics covered is custom tailored to serve you no matter where you are on your dog journey. A wide-eyed newbie figuring things out for the first time, or a longtime professional trainer or shelter rescue worker looking to fine-tune your skills and knowledge. It seems like everywhere you turn now since COVID, someone is offering yet another online event, course, or conference, promising the latest and greatest in dog training knowledge. But we've been doing this for over a decade, including in-person dog behavior conferences since 2010, to accompany our longtime Victoria Stillwell Academy and Positively.com courses for guardians and pet pros alike. So go to dogbehaviorconference.com now to check out the DBC and secure your seat today. Registration is open and available to you wherever you are in the world. The live event happens from April the 19th to the 21st, but you'll automatically get access to all of the recordings from the conference for 12 months. So it's okay if you can't join us live for some or all of the weekend. The DBC is special, and I'd hate for you to miss it. So visit dogbehaviorconference.com now to get your ticket. That's dogbehaviorconference.com. And now, back to the podcast. Ali, you said that Klaus also humps when he's around other dogs.
Yeah, so sometimes Klaus, when two dogs are playing and he really wants to get on in the fun, but he doesn't really know how to get their attention. When he was younger, he got humped a lot in the dog park. I think it's, this is just my hypothesis, but just he was very fluffy and other dogs just kind of targeted him as like a weird looking fluffy dog. And as soon as they'd hump with him, he'd turn around and play with them. And so I think that he thought that humping was an introduction to play. And so now he takes that when two dogs are playing and he wants to get in on it, he humps one of them. And then what do? They can't do anything but turn around and say, hey, what are you doing? And then he starts to play with them. And this is where I know Vic solving that problem. It's because she knows a lot about dog body language and she understands, she sits back and looks at what happens before this behavior and what happens after this behavior. And she recognizes the function of that behavior. And shameless plug, if you want to learn more, check out our course on why does my dog, and also how to speak dog. If you want to learn why does my dog do this behavior and look at the before and the after of the behavior, and then also learn this dog body language, because it kind of occurred to me looking at the before and the after that Klaus had learned this humping as a way, as a behavior to get what he wanted, when in reality, that's not what most dogs do. And it kind of was almost like slightly inappropriate dog behavior, because some dogs don't take too kindly to humping. So what could he do instead? What do dogs normally do to elicit play, to ask other dogs to play? They do a play bow, but I'd never really seen Klaus do a play bow. Don't really know why. I think he missed that lesson in puppy kindergarten. So I taught him to do a play bow. As a dog trainer, I, you know, popped out my training skills, and just in the home, in the kitchen, we learned how to do a play bow, put it on cue. And then I asked him to do it with other dogs in the park. And he slowly started to use that instead of humping. So that was a nerdy dog trainer trick of teaching him, hey, I think you're actually supposed to be doing this. And then he used that to replace it. So that was really cool that we did turn the humping, and not saying that humping is a problem, you know, humping is also a part of doggy play. That's actually quite normal and natural. So again, are all these behaviors, I like that Victoria said weird and wonderful, because some of them can be quite wonderful.
Sometimes very simple behaviors in the wrong moment can seem strange or unwelcome to us. Wendy, can you talk about that? But really, it's the dog getting relief.
Exactly. Exactly. There's something, an ordinary behavior, just as simple as standing still. For example, I had a dog. We would go out for a walk. It was a big dog, and she was a great walker. It's usually very easy. And then suddenly, it would seem out of the blue, she would just stand stock still. And being human, I'm like getting annoyed, thinking, what's wrong? You know, why are you doing this? This is so bizarre. And I came to understand, actually, that she had very thin paws. And it was a dry season, and we had all these little thistles on the ground. So she would get thistles. And she knew if she, you know, it was uncomfortable to move forward. But I didn't know that at first, and I would get annoyed. And it wasn't until I started to think from her point of view, okay, you know, there's got to be a reason. And then at that point, we would go through a little behavior, and I'd ask her for each paw, and I would look around, and eventually, and as soon as they were all gone, then she's like, okay, no, we're ready. But at first, if you don't think from her point of view, it seems strange. Like, why is this dog just shutting down in the middle of a walk when everything was great before? Or even something like peeing, right? Like a dog, I had a family member whose dog had been housebroken and then suddenly started peeing in the house. And it was like, why is this dog suddenly peeing in the house? Now, we know there could be medical reasons, but there wasn't a medical reason. It just happened that this person got a new boyfriend. And every time she stayed with the boyfriend, the dog would suddenly pee in the house near the boyfriend. And it turned out that the dog was scared of the boyfriend. And once they started to purposely make friends together and, you know, show that, because this boyfriend had a booming voice and was, you know, big movements and a little bit intimidating. And this dog was like, who is this person and what is going on here? And couldn't hold themselves, actually. It was a fear behavior. So that's another example of an ordinary behavior, but in a moment where we just don't necessarily, it seems strange to us, like, what is going on here?
Yeah, you know, that fear, anxiety, discomfort, that can really be misunderstood. And, you know, and I see it a lot when, especially when people are taking their dogs for a walk and then the dog sits down and doesn't want to move. I mean, there's so many reasons why the dog sits down and doesn't want to move. It's not because they're being stubborn, like people like to label it, but there's a lot of reasons why. And some of that could be, I don't feel comfortable out here. I don't feel physically comfortable. I don't feel mentally comfortable. I'm overwhelmed or I'm stressed and this place frightens me. So definitely seen that. Going back to George, now this George the Cocker Spaniel who cleared out the cupboards, the definitely there was a relationship. The clearing of the cupboards did start with a dog that already had separation issues, then went through a traumatic experience of hearing these very, very loud noises outside, which he did not understand. And the way that he could cope was to go and clear out the cupboards. And this might, I mean, I can't get in his head. I don't exactly know, but I believe that clearing out the cupboards for him was a coping mechanism, but he was also desperately trying to escape and to find somewhere that he could go into and hide. Only trouble was that he couldn't shut the door after him. And I felt like he needed a place to go hide so he could get into the cupboard. And of course, they filmed this. I didn't go there and see this, but they took footage of it way before. And he would clear the cupboards out and then he would try and get into the cupboard. But then he couldn't settle there because whatever was frightening him he still had to face it. He couldn't escape. So he'd come out of the cupboard and he would choose another cupboard to try. And he would take stuff out of that cupboard and then try and get into that cupboard. Then he would go upstairs and try and do the same thing for the cupboard. So I first of all, I was like, look, I think the kitchen should be out of bounds because the kitchen is dangerous. There's dangerous stuff in there. We don't want him to go into the cupboards. And fortunately, they could close the kitchen door and it wouldn't impact his ability to have space in the rest of the house, which is what he needed. But I also didn't want to take his cupboard clearing away from him. I thought that that would this was his coping mechanism. So if I stopped him from doing it right off, I didn't think that was fair. So we changed the cupboard upstairs, the guest room cupboard. We cleared out all the stuff from underneath and or from the bottom of it. And we put things like his toys and T-shirts that smelt like them and socks and things that he liked to carry around. He was not destructive, but we put that in there. And that was George's cupboard to clear out when he wanted to. And he could also get in there if he wanted to as well. But also next to the cupboard, in a kind of corner, I put a crate, but it wasn't a noisy crate. It was a canvas crate. And the crate itself, and the reason why I chose a canvas crate is that it has a little flap. And he could go in and out of the crate and the flap would close just by itself. And he could come out and the flap would open again, obviously, because it was just a cloth flap. But that satisfied his need to escape because he would go into there. It was a safe den-like space for him. Plus, there was a flap that closed. So he was able to find comfort in there. And after a while, he didn't need to clear the cupboards out anymore. He would still go into his crate. And by the way, the door was never closed. He could go in and out of there as much as he wanted to. And it was a canvas crate, so it wasn't loud. It didn't contribute to the noise. But I had to feed his need. And then we did the noise and stuff and help with a different part of that separation issue. But I remember her doing the update with her and we were filming and they would bring their dogs to this lovely house that we were filming with in the UK. And she bought and she gave me a card and it was a card of a dog with like laying back with a turban on its head. It was an animated card, by the way, with like cucumbers on its eyes. And it was like, dear Victoria, thank you for creating or thank you for letting me chill. And his life had been turned around. And that was so, it was so wonderful to see that, you know, what we label as strange or weird or just odd is actually most of the time a coping mechanism, isn't it? It's the way that a dog copes. It is normal dog behavior. It just is strange to us. Like we cope with certain things in different ways. This was George's way of coping. Like the humping dog out with the frisbee. It was a coping mechanism. And so when we tell dogs off for coping, when we call them stubborn, that they won't go for a walk, or they put their butts down on the ground and they won't move, we're really not giving credence to this very important way of communicating because our dogs are communicating to us. So, okay, Tiffany, can you talk when I'd previously said about walking? Can you talk about that and about maybe what we can do for dogs that really don't want to walk or put their bottoms on the ground and say, I'm not moving?
Yeah, I it made me think of a case that I had a few years back with a client who was very confused and very frustrated, as you shared, many people get. She had a young Pekingese, and every time she walked, and this was a retired woman who wanted to enjoy her time with her little dog walking in the retirement community. And every time she walked her dog, she said she would have to stop because the dog would sit down or lie down. She felt every several steps, and she couldn't figure out why. This is a young, healthy dog. There should be no reason, you know, why she won't walk, and I don't understand it. And even if I pull and tug, obviously we had to get through that conversation. Let's not do that. So my first visit, I asked, may I walk your dog and just see what I can observe? And interestingly, I mean, it sounds so simple, but this is where, you know, a trainer oftentimes needs to come in and give you a different perspective, or at least anyone else, perhaps, if you ask, might be able to give you a slightly different perspective. Because when I walked her little Pekingese, so we can think of, you know, the little smushed nose, adorable Pekingese and long hair, in Florida, mind you, I started to realize that where the dog was stopping was any shady spot, any tiny little patch of shade, she was stopping. And it was very obvious to me, not necessarily so obvious to her guardian, that she was just hot. She was hot and overwhelmed and didn't want to walk further, and she needed the shady spot as a relief. So it had nothing to do with behavior in this particular case. I mean, it was a behavior that was occurring, but I had to help the guardian understand, you know, walking at a different time of day, not walking as far, choosing certain parts of your neighborhood that had more shade so that you could walk further and the dog could be more comfortable. But I just always go back to this, stop and observe and ask yourself why. Even if you think about if putting yourself in the position of your dog, which I'm sure I've said that before on some of these other discussions, I just so desperately want to help my clients just think how you might feel, what might be going through your mind, what might be uncomfortable for you in this situation. It's possible that that's the same thing. She was just hot. She didn't want to walk on the hot pavement. She didn't want to walk in the bright sun. You know, she couldn't breathe as well as some other dogs. She had a lot of fur. It was a very simple fix. And something that we trainers never want to do is make the guardians, our clients, feel, you know, judged or stupid about anything like that, because they just simply weren't able to recognize what was happening. That's why they call us in, so that we can give them that perspective. But I was so happy that it was something so simple. So, you know, and everybody was pleased in the end. So
you're right. When it's like, when you see it and you go, ah, I got it. And it's not going to be like 5 million repetitions of this and that. And that. This is just a very truly, when we talk about quick fixes, shameless plug, there's a fabulous course on positivity.com. Isn't there, Ali, called Quick Fixes? Take it. It's brilliant. But this is a quick fix. This truly is a quick fix, because it just takes understanding. Now, when we talk about coping mechanisms, what does that really mean in terms of reinforcement?
Yeah, I totally want to jump in here, because I love what you both just said. And I was thinking about Dr. Israel Golddiamond, who worked with people with what we might call strange behavior. He was head of neuropsychiatry at Walter Reed Hospital in the United States, and worked with people who were labeled as psychotic. They may have hallucinations. Their behavior seemed not connected to reality. And one thing that he was famous for saying was, people make sense. People make sense. And he was talking about people with behaviors that were very difficult to understand. And here he was looking for exactly, in some ways, what you were talking about, Tiffany, what reinforcement is in the environment in this location versus that location. When we talk about coping mechanisms, we're often talking about what learning history has provided relief in the past, or what has provided access to pleasure in the past, aren't we? So that's what we mean when we're saying it. And when we come in with that mindset, we can start to see, aha, this behavior that looks utterly bizarre, because it might be totally detached from that earlier situation, or it might be still happening, like in the case of shade, it makes sense. I do think that when we come in with that attitude and we look at coping mechanisms in terms of what reinforcement, and negative reinforcement, relief is reinforcement, what reinforcement is maintaining it? We treat the learner, we treat the dog and the dog's behavior with a lot of dignity and respect. And we're also a lot more successful in finding good compromises for people and for dogs.
100%. And I also think that leads me to this whole idea of labels. that we, I mean, we love labels, we label behavior all the time, but Jamie, labels, they can be so problematic, can't they?
Absolutely. Tiffany's example was a fabulous one for that. A lot of people are so inclined to start putting, especially human tendencies, onto our dogs. And so, you know, we have a dog that's stopping and, oh, they're trying to get back at us because they're mad at us, or they're being stubborn, or they just don't want to listen. And that completely cuts us off from thinking about what might be happening for the dog, because we automatically assume it's a negative thing that they're doing for whatever reason we put on it, as opposed to what's happening for them. What's their motivation for doing this? So like Tiffany's example, the dog is hot and we might just be thinking they're being obstinate or stubborn. And so we don't stop to think about what they might be feeling instead.
Yeah. And so if anybody takes anything from this podcast, I do think it is that, you know, ask questions. And if you don't understand this, don't automatically rush to judgment, automatically say, hey, the dog is doing this. Really, really look at dog body language. And that's why our How to Speak course positively is so good, because it really helps you look at dog behavior. And it can change your whole perspective, because you see your dog in a completely different way. And that's why I love it. And I want to segue a little bit to human behavior, because we trainers, we deal a lot with human behavior. And I definitely, certainly with the cases that I go into and deal with on and off TV, they tend to be quite extreme. That's my wheelhouse. I love the weird, the bizarre. But I also had a client that was really just very neglectful of his dog. The whole family was. And it was a beautiful dog too, but they kept on leaving the door open. And so the dog kept running out, and they lived very near a busy highway. And so this dog would sometimes get onto the highway, and I'm like, I don't understand why you guys are not taking better responsibility of your dog. And I'm like, I don't think you really should be having a dog if this is what you do. And I ended up getting into a bit of, should we say, a discussion with the gentleman who didn't want me there at all. And he just was like, they let the dog pee and poo in the house and they let it off. I mean, like, nobody could really, there wasn't any schedule about feeding the dog. So the dog, which they called the dog, would be fed whenever anybody felt like feeding it. And it got to the point where I was like, I really don't think that this dog should be here. I think this is getting neglectful. And then the guy, and I took the guy, because he was being very belligerent and very like standoffish with me. And we just went for a walk, and I gave him we were just going to go do some training, because I wanted to see, I want him to be interested in his dog. Maybe there's something we can salvage. And I gave him a little treat bag. We started doing some stuff. And I was like, come on now. Why are you so just... Why not so neglectful, but like, you don't even call the dog by her name. And it transpired, and he told me, it's because I do not want to be attached to another dog again. Now, this guy, he's big, he's muscly, he's kind of scary, right? And he kind of broke down, and he said, I had a dog and I lost her and I fell into a big depression. And that's why when the family wanted another dog, I said, yeah, but they had to deal with it, because I did not want to connect with another dog again. So I rushed into judgment, thinking, well, you're just being neglectful. Well, you're just being nasty. Well, you're just being this and being that. But that's why I wanted to get him on his own, because I wanted to find out, is there something more going on than meets the eye? And indeed it was. He just didn't want to connect with his dog. Allie.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that. As someone who struggles with odd behaviors myself, I struggle with misophonia, which is like the hatred of noises. And so if I'm sitting talking with my husband at a coffee shop and someone next to me is smacking their gum, I cannot handle it and I will lash out at my husband, which doesn't make any sense. And luckily he knows and he'll figure it out, but we usually have to leave. And it's so odd because Vader, our doodle, has the same type of thing that if my husband, let's say for example, is making an espresso, he's a big coffee snob, I love him, and he is making an espresso in our machine that has a grinder and a steamer and it's really loud, all of a sudden Vader will get up and go jump on his brother and just start to play in a very intense way with his younger brother. And my husband was like, why does he always do that? And I'm like, it's because he cannot stand the noise of this machine. And so while to some people, they may not recognize, because there's a lot of other sounds going on, but it's this particular sound that drives Vader nuts. He also responds to like very specific engine noises, not all engines, but like, oh, if you're a Lex TX, don't come near Vader, but very specific noises, he can't handle it. So I definitely resonate with the odd behaviors coming from people. And then it's just interesting to see Vader is the same way. But let's talk about some fun behaviors. Laura, do you have a fun or cute behavior you could share with us?
Yeah. So my miniature Dachshund Cosmo, he has his favorite toy. It's one of those like flat, as they call them, the roadkill bunnies. He carries it around in his mouth and he's got into a habit now of he will get out of bed in the morning, take it downstairs and present it to me. And then when it's bedtime, he will take it back up to bed and he will put him to bed. And even one time we've gone up to bed, we've turned the lights off and he's got up and he's gone, oh my God, I haven't put my bunny to bed. And he'll go back downstairs, get the bunny, come back upstairs and be like, it's okay, Mum, I've got my bunny. We can go to bed now. And I just think it's so cute. And I think it's self-reinforced by me because every time he does it, I go, oh, Cosmo, you got bunny. And he's like, yes, I have.
That's very cute. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's thank you for the reminder that it's not all, you know, medical issues and weirdness, that some of these can just be absolutely adorable. And I think one that we all see with our dogs are zoomies. So zoomies, if you're not familiar, are these rapid behaviors that your dog just seems like they're really excited, out of control. They're outside. Sometimes they're inside, which is not preferable because zoomies will be jumping all over the couch. But it's when your dog almost gets into like evolves into rabbit form. And bounces all over the place. But this is something that we do study at VSA. I'm sure I know we have a definition for it, but I can't remember it now. But it's
Freps.
Yes.
Sorry, yes. Please don't tell me, don't ask me what it actually stands for. It's frenetic. Somebody can you Google it, please? Because I know it's frenetic or Fraps. No, Freps. Freps. Frenetic, la, 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 la.
Rapid action move patterns.
Okay, so what is it?
Yeah, it's like frenetic rapid action motor patterns. Seems to not have a function, I think. And that's, we talk about like play just in general, but it's mostly just to get energy out. It's just this sudden release of boundless energy. And it's quite comical. And just so you know, your dog, there's nothing wrong with your dog. Your dog is, this isn't an Allie ruins everything moment. This is truly just joy incarnate. So this is something that you can enjoy with your dog. And it's just, it's an exciting moment. So relish it with your dog, reinforce it if you like. If you don't like, and it is in the house, you can encourage it. Maybe we can interrupt it a little bit, but encourage it outside. So that's something we can do.
I know. And I love it. It's frenetic random activity periods. Fraps. I knew it was something apps. But fraps, that's it. Frenetic random activity periods. Yeah. And my dog, even Chihuahua, she's nearly 14. She still has them. And it's the cutest thing. And it's joy for her. It's just absolutely joyful. But I think I reinforce it as well because I'm laughing. And I'm like, she sees that I'm delighted as well. And so, you know, yeah, I love that. And I love that to end this discussion on. We'll end it on a really good note. But Laura, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I was going to say, so with the fraps, I've seen quite a lot of dogs do it after they've been like toweled off. They get like so excited. They're like, oh my God, yes, that was great. And they just start like zooming around.
Yeah, I think sometimes, I see dogs do it and some dogs that are just, it's almost like a relief thing. It's like, oh my God, thank God the bath is done. I mean, maybe it's something else. We can't get in the dog's head, but it's like, yay. Amazing. I love this. And that's why I thought this is such a great subject for a podcast. Because there's so much more behavior we can talk about. So we'll do this another one. We'll bring other different behaviors to another podcast in the future, because I really love this subject. Again, what we call strange and weird behavior is often a coping mechanism. It can be something where the dog is overwhelmed and trying to deal with it, or it can sometimes be where the dog is joyful and just loving life. Thank you again to my VSA and Positively team, Ali, Jamie, Wendy, Laura, Tiffany, Tara, and Maya. It, you know, when I'm talking about this whole thing with George and separation and the noise issues he was having as well, and you see stats of Tara and Maya and Tiffany, and I know Tara especially, she's got the construction that is going on in her house, so she can't really talk, otherwise it's very loud. But I would like to do a podcast in the future about this connection between separation issues and noise issues as well. So I think that's worthy of a whole podcast and quite a serious subject. But I just have to say that George is doing very, very well. And yeah. And now they understand it and they can also manage it. But they're also giving George enrichment as well. They're allowing him to do Cocker Spaniel things, which they weren't, and he's absolutely acing it. So I gave him like a sniffy course obstacle course outside in the back garden. Fortunately, they've got a lovely big back garden, and he absolutely loves it. So that's bringing that enrichment component in there too. Wow. Thank you, everybody. I'm so glad that you came here. Thanks for everybody who came on Zoom. We love it. And we love your comments, too. We really appreciate you attending live. And to everybody who's listening on this podcast, I hope that you enjoyed it. And I will see you all again. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. For Victoria's online dog training courses, more information, and helpful dog training tips, visit Victoria's official website at positively.com. Get connected on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media as Victoria Stilwell, and follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Learn to become a professional dog trainer with the Victoria Stilwell Academy at vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps you and your dog live your best life together. Positively.